Welcome. To the last Dharma talk of the year on this auspicious day, the day after the winter solstice, which was the shortest day of the year, return towards the light. Also yesterday was the full moon, and also we're in the middle of a ceremony called Transmitting Dharma for our good friends Reverends Jean and Robert from Monterey. For this week, they've been here doing many, many ceremonies, all encompassed as one week-long ceremony. Tonight is the transmission of the Bodhisattva precepts. Our regular old meeting room, our Dokusan room, has been transformed into a red heart chamber. It's so wonderful to just sit with you all. I hesitate to say anything more, but this is the scheduled event. It's a talking time, so a little bit more. Well, we won't have our regular tea this evening because of these nighttime ceremonies that will continue tonight. So we'll have a kind of quieter evening. I think Dana brought this book last week, but did you read from it?
I didn't.
Was it a,
yeah.
Was it a, what was the section? This is the extensive record of Ehe Dogen, our 13th century founder. And he gave special discourses on certain evenings of the year. And one of them that's traditionally marked in the Zen calendar is the winter solstice, which we celebrated yesterday. I think one of the major four Zen Buddhist events in the old calendar, even though it's not really like a Buddhist holiday, there was something about the solstice, winter solstice only, New Year's Eve, and then the opening and closing of practice period. Those are the four major celebrations for some reason in this old culture. So we don't have any special ceremony, except many, many ceremonies today for the solstice. But I thought I'd bring up one of Dogen's winter solstice Dharma Hall discourses from the year 1240. Dogen quotes Lao Tzu, the writer of the Tao Te Ching, which is unusual for Dogen to do. He says, attaining oneness, heaven is clear. Attaining oneness, earth is at rest. That's a quote from the Tao Te Ching, the classic founding text of what we call Taoism. Attaining oneness on the solstice, heaven, the vast, spacious sky is clear. Attaining oneness, earth is at rest. Attaining oneness is a little bit of an oxymoron. If everything's already at one, how can one attain it? Maybe we could say, according with oneness, everything is one as it is, but we often are out of accord with such a truth. Oneness, it's kind of one of those spiritual phrases that we tend to avoid in Zen, I think, often because it's so generic and so maybe overused. And what does it really mean? Oneness. Everything is one. One whole, complete. What looks like a bunch of different stuff happening is really one event, this moment. Not even really this moment. That's kind of limiting too, because oneness includes all time and all space, but expressed here and now like this. Attaining oneness, according with oneness, the heavens are clear. And of course, that's like oneness. Space has always been one space. But also attaining oneness, earth is at rest. In Taoism, they have these terms, you know, like heaven and earth, the inconceivable workings, and then the workings of humans on earth. But according with the oneness of the heavens, earth is at rest. The people, and with all our seeming problems down here on earth, are at rest. And this is the rest in the middle of busyness. And then Dogen, commenting on Lao Tzu, says, attaining oneness, a person is at peace. Attaining oneness, the time becomes bright, or yang. This was the way they saw the solstice, was that yin, the darkening time of the year, has come to full fruition, and now the light returns, the yang side returns, the brightness begins. At the darkest night, right at the darkest, longest night of the year, the brightness begins. Right at the ebb of all energy, the fulfillment of yin energy, of yin passivity, everything dying off from the fall, right at that very moment, new life comes forth. Today, as the solstice. As this oneness grows within the days growing longer, the Buddhas and ancestors attain longevity. Everybody, within this growth, you arouse awakening mind, practice, engage the way with effort, and attain realization of a single phrase. Within this growth, that starts at the solstice, the light coming, which is also called oneness. Within this oneness, where there's nothing to do about anything, here we arouse awakening mind, the intention, the aspiration to practice, and we practice, engage the way with effort, and attain realization of a single phrase, any single phrase. We accord with a single phrase like just. Just. You have already attained the power and vitality that is within this growth. Therefore, making a rosary, a mala, string of beads, with the bodies of Buddhas and ancestors, you reach 365 days. You string together a mala bead made up of Buddha ancestors, 360 days worth. Each day is manifesting a Buddha strung together until the next winter solstice. Every time this day of winter solstice arrives, the length of days proceeds just like this. This is exactly the body and mind of Buddhas and ancestors, so this growth proceeds like this. On this auspicious occasion of the solstice, knowing the count is the single brightness. So this is the way that our ancestor Dogen talks sometimes, which leaves us wondering what's going on, maybe, when we hear such words. But we have a day, a certain day called the solstice, where the light changes, everything is renewed, and at that time, like every time, but at this time, all things are one. There is the oneness of being. The oneness that includes all our discomfort, all the anxiety of the holiday season, all the family stuff around this time of year. The cold, the leaves falling, the rain day after day, with no sun, the sun, the rain, all one whole circle of oneness, with nothing to do about it, except just be this life. And yet within this oneness, as Dogen says, then there is arousing the bodhicitta, awakening mind, there's practice, realization, and so on, as a kind of a play, a dance within the oneness where nothing needs to be done ultimately. We express this through our practice, and particularly our practice of just sitting. It's the sitting that's according with oneness, to sit here, even though we might not be so still and at rest in mind and body, still there's a way in which stopping our activity, sitting down and upright, we come into accord with oneness, with not having to do anything about anything. So, that's a celebration of oneness. Our sitting zazen is not so much to attain a oneness that is not here. It's a celebration of the oneness that is here. And in this spirit, I wanted to bring up this new program that we're offering this next year at Zen Center. that we just posted on the website, and we have copies outside if you'd like to pick one up. We don't have so many, but called Warming the Jewel is the name of this program. And I think it's good to remember, for me and anyone interested in such a program, to remember that this is in the context of oneness, in the context where there's nothing to be done. This is not like our practice is lacking and we need to do something more. If we have that perspective, we're already off track. And yet we're offering this like program of commitment to more practice opportunities throughout the year, and wholeheartedly engaging our what we call Zen practice. But in the realm where everything is actually complete to begin with. So why would we do such a thing? Well, on the winter solstice, we celebrate oneness by coming into accord with it. And even to say, I don't know why we sit zazen, and especially why we would want to increase our commitments to something that's not anything, actually. It's kind of strange. I think so. And yet, I feel so great about the fact that we're offering this. Even if nobody takes it up, I feel great just that we're offering it. Anyway, this is what it says on this this page of describing this, called Ways to Deepen Your Zen Practice. You know, it's a little bit like a joke, because you can't really deepen Zen practice. And yet, here's ways to deepen Zen practice. And we wholeheartedly offer this. And it's kind of like a joke, and it's like dead serious at the same time. And dead serious and complete joke are wrapped into one whole package we call oneness. And we call this Warm Jewel Temple, so we call this program Warming the Jewel, which is the same point, right? This is already the Warm Jewel Temple. The jewel is already warm. This is it. And I can feel the warmth in this room of our central gathering place of Warm Jewel Temple, this warm jewel room. And yet here's a program for warming the jewel that's already warm. This is a new opportunity for those who have begun Zen practice and want to take the next step, and for experienced practitioners who want to refresh their wholehearted dedication to the way. Warming the jewel is a one-year commitment to the intention of bringing deep awareness of our present experience into our meditation practice and into our daily lives for the benefit of everyone we meet, including ourselves, and to studying the teachings of the Buddhas and ancestors deeply and thoroughly so as to transform our understanding and life experience. Now, this transformation part might seem like it's doing something to change something, but what strikes me most about this is that it's just the commitment to the intention of bringing deep awareness of the present experience into our life. How much more simple could something be than that? It's not about like learning some special new thing, but it's about bringing awareness of this present experience into both our meditation practice and our daily life, because the irony of this oneness that we live in is such that even though we're always present, we don't appreciate it so much of the time. But within Zazen, where it's just about not doing anything but being present, it's one way of talking about it. And our life, they get so busy. So something very simple, and yet what we call practice is about this very simple activity, or we could even call non-activity. And so we're committing to a non-activity, which makes it a kind of different kind of commitment. Committing to a non-activity. We might feel like, I'm so busy, I have so many activities already, why would I commit to more activities? But it's really more like committing to a non-activity. But the non-activity takes the form of, like, you know, coming to events on the schedule. But all the events are ultimately about non-activity and can most joyfully be practiced in that light. Actually, this begins with a quote from Dogen Zenji from the essay on wholehearted engaging the way, the Bendowa. Dogen says, although this inconceivable Dharma is abundant in each person, it is not actualized without practice, and it is not experienced without realization. So, same point. This is already abundant in each person. Oneness is already the state of affairs, and yet it's not actualized without practice. It's not experienced without realization. How do we actualize oneness? This program is based on making Zen practice in the Sangha a priority while recognizing that we live complex householder lives. And I think this is one of the main points here, is that it's wonderful to commit to practicing at home on our own. We deeply honor and encourage such practice. But this particular program is about doing this together. Warming the jewel as a community together, which Zen practice always has this sense of, again, something very strange, I think, that we sit silently facing the wall in our own oneness, and yet we do it together in the Sangha, in the community. The program offers a challenging array of practice opportunities and Dharma studies, but is designed to be sustainable and enlivening for a person with family responsibilities and a full-time job. And I won't describe all the details of this practice. You can look at it yourself, but it's lots of, you know, it's very specific, actually. And we talked about different ideas of having this kind of program be a more self-designed thing. People would come up with their own practice, and then that would be it. And I think that's a valuable thing, and that's how we've been doing practice periods recently. But I thought there's also value in having this kind of shared, kind of bottom line standard for this particular program. And then I think it would be kind of challenging for people, although some people are already doing basically what this program involves without even, you know, thinking that they're committing to anything. It's just naturally happening. But it's like looking at it and in terms of a year, which is quite a while, so many changes go on in our lives in a year. But the way I see this is, I see a lot of practice things is as a laboratory, like an experiment. This could be a thing like, well, what would happen to me if I did this for a year? And well, it could be really bad. It could be like you wouldn't have any time, you'll feel totally busy and rushed, and you're doing all this useless stuff, and it doesn't go anywhere. Or something else. So more like it's a year of life to play with. And the program would start at the beginning of each, the fall and the winter practice period, and again in the summer. So every 4 months we'll have a starting period. So maybe a little group would join in, and then the groups would start overlapping. So it's a vision. We can see. But when practice period starts in mid-February, if anybody is interested in this, it'd be good to, you know, before a few weeks at least beforehand, we could talk about it. So, maybe I'll just see if there's things people like to bring up, we can have a discussion now too. Because I feel like we often don't have so much time for like a larger discussion, either about this program or this idea of practicing something when everything is already one. Or about anything else you'd like to bring up. I think it's really, it's an open time. You can bring up anything you'd like about a practice on this last talk of the year. We won't meet next week either because it's a holiday rest time. Yes.
It seems like Buddhism's sort of an oxymoronic practice.
Yeah.
And if that's so, why were you attracted to it?
I think because of that. That it's actually, if it were more like you do this and then you get this and then it's done, I think I would have lost interest longer ago. So and it evolves, and my feeling about it changes. I think most people come to practice with not so much an oxymoron feeling, like that we come feeling like this will really, you know, things are not one actually. This doesn't look like oneness to me. My life is kind of a mess and the world looks like a mess. And, you know, it's not so much that I'm out of accord with the oneness that is. It's more like I just do not believe this oneness. And then we hear about oneness and, all things being at rest. We hear about heaven being clear and earth being at rest, and some part of our heart is open to that. And I feel like for me, it was something like that. And as time went on, seems like practice became less and less tangible and graspable for me, and less and less about trying to achieve some particular thing, and more about celebrating I don't even know what, actually. Like, just maybe earlier on it was celebrating something, and now it's just about celebrating. And very strange. But there's something built into it, built into the whole container of what we call practice. I think especially in Zen, that something is being expressed through this celebration that we can't quite even say what it is. Now, I think other forms of Buddhism don't talk about practice in this oxymoronic or moronic way. It's quite like this. They might say, like, you do this practice and then you go to here and then you do this practice and then you realize this and then you're happy and you can go home. Maybe not exactly like that, but it's a little more cause and effect looking. Has the appearance of more like cause and effect relationship of, you do this and you get this. I think Zen, we have these teachings too, but the style of Zen seems to be more like nobody actually knows what it is, and it doesn't seem to be going any particular place, and yet there's something about it. And I feel that quality for me personally has deepened over the years, so that there were a lot of like practices in my earlier days of practice, a lot more specific Buddhist practices that weren't really Zen, but that I wanted to do. And I, like, you know, I almost had like, I think I actually did even like write down like kind of checklists sometimes of like to, you know, master the 8 jhanas. I'd like to do all the 13 ascetic practices. I'd like to follow every precept possible, like, you know, even to the point of writing these things down sometimes. Like, wouldn't it be great to, like, again, in kind of the spirit of a laboratory, like, wouldn't it be good to test out all these teachings that all these Buddhas and ancestors have offered us? But it's kind of like that, over time, I think that seemed more and more like a chore to go through all those lists of different practices. So, I can still get into that kind of thing, but it's less interesting to me than just continuing this, whatever this is. Maybe that was kind of a bleak answer, but an oblique answer. Yes?
Oh, I was just... Yeah. I was thinking maybe it's just the happiness that you're feeling this from the product of practicing.
Yeah. It's hard to know, you know, if we can get into the cause and effect thing, if practice creating happiness, and it might work that way, and maybe we, sometimes it seems like it works that way. But it also seems that the more we don't even try to arrange things to be like that, the more that we don't even care so much about happiness or sadness, that it all becomes like, well, it's just what's happening, then we're more and more according with this oneness. And the oneness includes happiness and sadness. And it's, maybe we could even say beyond happiness, it's more like a deep peace. It's like when heaven and earth are at rest, even when they're busy.
By the idea of signing up to do less.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I didn't read the part.
I didn't even know me. I appreciate it. I mean, I really genuinely think, now, dang, that's good, Kokyo. That's good, you know?
Yes. For people who are busy, sign up to do less.
I mean, that's really brilliant.
No, I didn't read the part, the paragraph that makes it sound like it might be more.
I've read it. Like 20 million. Where?
You know? Did it sound like more to you when you read it?
Oh, it always sounds like more.
Yeah.
That's why the idea of thinking about it as less,
yeah,
is very powerful.
Even like committing to do less. But not just, but in this case, it's not just committing to do less, it's committing to do less in this particular form of like coming together with the Sangha at a particular time and place where the hand and the clock goes by, like, you know, a 40-minute period of the day, for example, and that time is gone, but we do less during that time.
Well, yeah, and I mean, that
but that is, time's gone.
That's the key of the one who is not busy.
Mm.
It's not about reducing the external circumstances, even though, of course, there's a part of that that is true. Fundamentally, it's about just being.
That's well put, yeah.
Not busy.
Busy doesn't mean, we often think that it means reducing the external circumstances, and sometimes there is that aspect, for sure.
Sometimes.
But, yeah, the deep rest is not concerned with how many activities something looks like. And again, personally, I feel like my experience is something like this. Like these days, I didn't think that I would be so involved in this Dharma transmission ceremony because Maya-san from Green Gulch came down to be the instructor for the ceremony to take care of all of that. There's several attendants and cooks and many, many people are actually taking part in this ceremony. So I thought, well, you know, I don't need to be really so involved. And I thought I might be a little bit, but like today, it was basically the entire day. And then there were these breaks for Zazen. And it really, I'm like, I don't have time to go to Zazen. I have a talk to do tonight. And also this time of the year, there's all the, I really wanted to get this gift mailed off to my parents. For several days, it's been sitting on the floor, like, you know, with this kind of little pile of wrapping paper, and I was like looking at it on the floor, and just like, it would only take like an hour or less to get this all together, but it hasn't come together. And like, I could use that hour of Zazen. I could have done that. At noon Zazen, I could have like gone back there and put that all together. And now it's probably gonna be late. But I have to say that I really appreciated, and you know, I'm often late for noon Zazen in particular. I'm always like totally engrossed in doing something at that point. And like the clock, you know, the church bell starts ringing, I'm like, ah! But like, it's the noon bell, and it's very nice because the noon bell rings for like 3 minutes. And it takes me 3 minutes to get here from my house over there. So, if I leave at the noon bell, I can still get here before the noon bell is ended. That's a trick I have.
A secret trick.
Yeah. So like the Doan is sitting there, I'm like, yeah, the noon bell's still ringing, right? It's not that late. But anyway, it's like, okay, boom, Zazen. And then to actually, yeah, it puts all these things, and like, okay, that maybe that doesn't get mailed today. It's okay. In fact, it's really good, I feel like, for my parents, who, instead of receiving that gift rushed together and stuffed into a box at the last minute, I think it's better for them and all beings if I just don't do that, actually. And I'll do it eventually. But just come over here and just sit down and do less, accomplish nothing for 40 minutes. It actually keeps me sane. And it puts things in a different perspective. And that's it's an interesting thing in terms of this program, because it's like, if there wasn't like a scheduled period when I feel like that I've committed to, I wouldn't do it actually. I mean, I could say I'd like to, but reality is, if I'm right in the middle of something, I'm like, well, just I'll just finish this, and then it's time for lunch, and then it's time for the next thing. So there's something about like the commitment to do less. Actually, I totally feel that working in my life, particularly around noon Zazen. For me personally, it's a great period. I recommend it. It's meant to be like a kind of lunch hour period for this function of like people, you know, in the middle of work day. And we have some, you know, lawyers who come, and they're kind of running in often with their, you know, tie and suit on, and sit there and then go back to their law practice. We have two lawyers who come in noon, Zazen, and others. And committing to doing less. Yes.
So I like the words.
Yeah. Yeah.
A year sounds like a long time.
It does, yeah, a year. I mean, there's some things built in here, like there's a 4-week vacation, a month-long vacation built into this year. And I mean, there's things like, it actually includes 5 periods of zazen a week. And in the terms of space, we didn't write this in, but that sounds like a lot. But we actually offer, and this is amazing, I think we might be kind of unique as a small Zen center in America, we offer 17 40-minute periods of zazen a week, pretty much every week here. So 5 is not even a third. So, I don't know if that's encouraging. Another way that I sometimes work with these things, like today, I work working with this of like, I don't have time for the, and I kept saying like, do I need to be here for this last rehearsal of this? And they said, well, if you could just stay for this little thing, because these ceremonies are very complicated. And I hope it was helpful. And there's something when it starts getting almost ridiculous, like there's not even kind of like a gap in the day. For myself, again, a little trick maybe I sometimes use, is I go into like, what we might call, like a stupid mind. Or we talked about in Sesshin, you know, stupid shamatha. This is a little different. This is like a fool, like an idiot kind of mind that's like, and I think of it because this is one of the things that I think I'm reminded anyway of Norman Fisher, the abbot, past abbot of Zen Center, and in Rohatsu Sesshins in particular, he would really try to promote this what we call night sitting. So he's like, you know, after you've done a full day from 5 a.m. till 9 p.m. and after you've done like 4 days of that or something, your body's really hurting, you are just dying to get into bed. When 9 o'clock comes, you're like, oh my god, now, finally, at least one short night of sleep before another 3 days of this. He said, at that time, come back to the Zendo. And he's like, and probably the only way you'll be able to do this is to like have a mind like a fool or an idiot. Almost like it's completely ridiculous. Why would you do that? And it's a little bit like, you know, noon zazen felt today. For me, there's all these things I could be doing. And like people will come, people are here. There was a Doan. I could have even just like offered incense and left, you know, and taken care of things. But it's a little bit like this mind is just like, well, I'm just like, why not? Just might as well, like, you know, I have all these things to do, but like, whatever. It's kind of like that kind of stupid mind. And if you really get into that kind of stupid mind, I find it's a lot of fun, actually. Because it goes beyond like the stress thing. Because if I did actually say just offer incense and go back, okay, now I'm back into this, finally I can do this, boom, 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 we're just back into it. But here it's like, when it gets to a certain point of like ridiculous, and that's why we do things like sesshins and night sitting and stuff, because you get to a certain point where it becomes ridiculous, and that's when we really like let go, I think. And it becomes fun. It becomes like, this is absurd. There's no good reason to do this. And I'm in total pain, and I'm gonna cross my legs again. And there's this little voice inside that just starts laughing. Sometimes, I think. And it's just like, fine. Yeah. We'll just do that. We are just like, I'm not going to resist anymore because there's too much to resist here. And I think that's part of the reason we set up these kind of like extreme situations, like sitting for days on end, is just to like break down our resistance until we're just like, okay, like whatever. Fine. And then it's a certain kind of mind, and it might not be so dramatic, it might be just like we just get really like mushy. So we're like still sitting upright, but we're like mushy, so that you know, then in the middle of that, you know, I don't know, sitting one more period or something, and then somebody says, by the way, can you stay after this period and like clean up the whole zendo and like, you know, do all that shiden work and everything? And then we're in this mind, we're just like, oh yeah, okay. What, and is there something else I can do? We just get like Dogen calls it, this, you know, nushin. It's like this like soft mind, he calls it, like flexible mind, like, oh yeah, like, and I think I can see it happening with these guys in the ceremonies, because it's just, you know, they're on their like, you know, 50th ceremony or something, and we're going, oh, now it's getting really detailed now, and can you memorize all these lines on top of it and these different parts? And they're just like, okay, yeah. And then what happens next? Okay, got it, yep. And then what? So, something. So I think the problem is that if we don't, if we're kind of like, sort of like, try to, if we resist the stupid mind and kind of like try to, well, I can commit to this, you know, I think we do have to do this to some extent. We can say, I can do this, and this, and like, don't overcommit. But then there's some times when it's like, but I'm committed to this, but like, I really don't have time today. And I'm not saying that in a program like this, I think this will happen for everybody, and there's times like this, and that's totally okay. Where like, I think anybody who wants to do anything like this, it's totally adaptable. It's play, this is all like, for fun. You know, it's all kind of a joke, and it's deadly serious. So, anyway, there's something about like, if we go beyond what we think is possible, then that encourages this kind of stupid mind. If we stay like in our kind of smart, rational mind, like, I can't do that, it doesn't work, no question, then it's not as fun. Is it? Not to say that, you know, this kind of thing, no guarantee that this is like, you know, 365 days of fun, such a program, but in oneness, oneness goes beyond fun and no fun. It says at the end here, practice happens when we take it up. It's challenging to approach the living edge of our practice in life. I think the living edge is something like this edge of this point of where we go beyond, or where rational mind like falls over into like a fool, like an idiot. Warming the jewels designed to help bring us to this living edge. This solstice, this is a different solstice talk of Dogen. This solstice is an auspicious occasion. Yesterday, the short length of day departed, yin reached its fullness, and the sound of cold wind ceased. This morning, the growing length of day arrived, and yang, the brightness, arises with a boisterous clamor. Now patchrobe monks feel happy and sustained, and the Buddha ancestors dance with joy. How could directly transcending the realm of the awesome sound, king of emptiness, have anything to do with the seasons of spring, autumn, winter, summer? We offer any merit accumulated in the year of 2010, since the last winter solstice, to the foolishness of all beings on this resting earth. Beings are numberless, I vow to save them. Delusions are inexistent. Chrysostomo. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable. I vow to become it.